Please be seated. Wow. What a Sunday. We have two incredible conversion stories today. From two men who will become, in essence, the founders of Christianity as we know it. Two conversion stories. But what does it mean to be converted? My grandmother lived in the same house for over 40 years. It was just up the Hudson River from New York City, this big old mansion. I think it had 9 bedrooms. As a little girl, from the moment I stepped over the threshold into her house, it was like a whole nother universe. There were all these nooks and crannies, secret hiding places, places where you could store your toys and no one would find them. My cousins and I would have hide-and-seek games that lasted for hours. I found this spot behind the cloaks in the downstairs coat closet. There was like a whole room back there. You could store stuff and take a nap and no one could find you. There was an attic with a sloping roof, an old rickety ping pong table, and when you played ping pong, the table would go like this. It was an awesome place. And I could feel my grandmother's presence everywhere. And that was a good thing, generally. Especially the chocolate that she hid above the grandfather clock. I think I made it all the way to college before someone asked me if I had been saved. When was the first time someone asked you that? I remember it very well. This young girl was very bubbly, very, very bubbly. Have you been saved? And I thought, wait, I don't understand what you're talking about. Do you know Jesus? And I said, yeah, I'm trying to get to know Jesus. Have you been saved? Well, yeah, I guess. Okay, fine. And then she just walked off as if that was it. End of conversation. I was either in or out. I was either saved or damned. It was black and white and her job was over. I never saw her again. I wish conversion were that simple. But it's not. Saul was very religious, very devout. He was a Pharisaic Jew. He studied the scriptures his whole life, and he really thought that God wanted him to capture and even kill these new followers of Jesus. And he was rabid about it. He was solely focused. It's possible that Paul may have slight OCD, but it worked to his benefit. Paul is on his way to Damascus. He's getting letters to prove that there are members of the synagogue that have gotten baptized. He's going to imprison them and do God knows what else to them. And he's rushing along on the road with his total focus. And there's this light that comes down upon him and this voice. Now, Jesus only repeats someone's name twice, one other time in the Gospels, and it's to Martha. Remember Martha and Mary? Martha's really busy in the kitchen, and she's getting all flustered and anxious about dinner. And Jesus has to say, Martha, Martha, slow it down. That's my translation. Jesus has to repeat Saul's name twice because he's so focused and so anxious and so forward-moving that once wasn't enough. So this voice says, "Saul, Saul." And then, instead of being angry, because, I mean, beloved people have been murdered, instead of being angry, Jesus asks Saul a question. "Why? Why are you persecuting me?" And Saul says, "Who are you?" And the risen Christ answers, "I'm Jesus, whom you're persecuting. But get up and go to Damascus, and I will show you what to do." Now, most people think that from that moment, that was it. Paul was Paul, the teacher, the expert, the amazing guy that he was. But no, that moment was the beginning of a series of struggles. First of all, Paul is blinded. He can't see anything for 3 whole days. Now, I don't know about you, but that would freak me out. And then after he's healed of his blindness, he's baptized. But Paul doesn't start teaching and becoming the Paul that we know for 3 years. There's 3 years of total silence, off the radar. Paul doesn't do anything. That's as long as Jesus' ministry was in the Gospels. 3 years is a long time. Paul takes a serious sabbatical. He seems kind of lost, unsure. It takes him all that time to figure out what has happened to him, and what he's supposed to do next. You see, my friends, conversion is not a black and white thing. It's a process. It happens when you step over the threshold into a relationship with Jesus, but it doesn't end there. Oh my goodness, there are so many places that you can go once you're in relationship with Jesus. And nothing is for certain, because you need to get to know him more and more and more, and the relationship will ever deepen and ever grow for the rest of your lives. Conversion is the beginning of a lifelong journey. You know, the word convert is the same as the word for conversation. Con means with, and ver means turn. When we enter into a relationship with God, we're turning with God. God is constantly turning us here and turning us there, because we need to grow and learn and grow and learn. It is not some stagnant thing. It is a blooming, a flowing, and unfolding of your entire life. And it is not always easy by any means. You could say that Peter got converted very early on. At least that's when he stepped over the threshold into a relationship with Jesus. He was out fishing and hadn't caught anything. He gets to the shore, and this guy says, "I need you to push out in your boat so I can teach." And you can see Peter's probably thinking, "What is going on?" But he lets Jesus get in his boat. They go out a little bit, and Jesus teaches this whole crowd on the shore. Now, if you go to the Sea of Galilee, if you get in a boat, the water, it serves like a great acoustics. So when you speak, people can hear you on the shore if you're in the water. The water really echoes the sound. So Jesus teaches all these folks on the shore. But I don't think Peter was listening. I think he was exhausted. Maybe he took a nap in the boat. But after the teaching is over, Jesus looks at Peter and says, "Throw your net over the side of the boat." And Peter says, "Lord, I've been fishing all night." I think Jesus must have given him a look, because there's no other more conversation, but Peter does throw the net over the edge of the boat. And it's so full of fish that he can hardly bring it in. So he pulls this net in, and then he falls down on his knees and says, "Lord, I'm not worthy to be in your presence." So he opens his eyes. He realizes he's in the presence of a man of God. And he leaves everything and he follows Jesus. But that's just the beginning, because Peter has so much to learn. He's competitive. He's resentful. He says something brilliant and then the next moment something stupid. He's a leader, but he doesn't know where he's leading people. And then as they get closer to the cross, when confronted by the authorities, Peter lies and he pretends he doesn't even know Jesus. He betrays him, denies his existence 3 times. But Peter had a quality that Judas never had. And I hope you'll have this quality too. Somewhere deep inside Peter's heart, he knew that no matter how much he messed up, Jesus would still love him. And I want you to know that too. No matter what you do wrong, no matter how many times you fall down or run in the wrong direction, Jesus will still love you. Because Peter doesn't despair. Judas, after he betrays Jesus, kills himself. He despairs. But Peter doesn't. Peter hangs in there. He sees the resurrected Christ, who tells the disciples, "Go to Galilee." So in the gospel, we heard Jesus has told the disciples to go to Galilee, and they're sitting there on the shore, and you can just tell they don't know what the heck to do. What do we do now? So Peter says, "I'm going fishing." I mean, what else do they know how to do, right? So they go out in the boat, and just like the first time, they can't catch anything. As the sun is rising, they see this man on the shore. And he says, "You can't catch anything, huh?" I love the resurrected Christ. He's always smiling, joking, laughing. He says to them, "Throw your net over the right side of the boat." He remembers the first time Peter recognized him. So they throw the net over, and of course it's full of fish, and they try to pull it in, and John, the beloved disciple, says, "It's the Lord." And Peter can't wait to get to him. In fact, they're totally naked on the boat, and he puts on all of his clothes so he'll look respectable, and then he jumps in the water. Because when we're in love, we do stupid stuff, right? He jumps in the water and he swims to the shore, and there's Jesus cooking for them. He's got a fire. He's broiling some fish. He's got some bread. And over that breakfast, Jesus asks Peter, "Do you love me?" 3 times. And Peter is still the same guy that gets frustrated. After 2 times, he says, "Lord, why are you asking me this? Haven't I already told you I love you?" From the year 100 AD until now, when a person is baptized, we ask them to renounce evil 3 times and to turn to Jesus 3 times. Because from the moment of your conversion and your baptism, you're going to need to turn away from despair to Jesus. and away from doing the wrong thing to Jesus, and away from your self-criticism to Jesus. And this process of turning, this process of conversion, it's going to continue your entire life. The farther you get in, the more there will be challenges and more opportunities to turn and turn and turn again. You know, in John chapter 14, Jesus says, there are many rooms in my Father's house. And we've always thought, well, that means in heaven there's lots of different places. Well, probably, but there's also places in this life. There are so many levels of devotion, so many kinds of turning. You will face different obstacles, different challenges, and again, God will call you to turn and come closer and deeper and further in and further up, as C.S. Lewis used to put it. And the journey will never end, not in this life or in the life to come, because you are turning with Jesus. You are conversing with the Lord, and that process has only just begun. So next time some bubbly person comes up and says, are you saved? I want you to say, yes, and it's only just begun. Amen.